gosh. My
How
mug
do you
had a
defriend?
leak.
How do you defriend someone in real life?
Yeah, my mug had a leak and the wine just spilled out the bottom of it as soon as I put it in the microwave.
Why did you microwave it?
Because it's mulled wine. It's supposed to be hot.
That's what a stove is for.
I don't want to. That's a lot of effort, and I would have been much later.
Oh my gosh. Well, let me tell you where I was on Christie's list.
Oh my God. I was trying to clean up wine out of my microwave.
Listen, youngest child.
Also.
Been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Weep into your mulled wine.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sad. That mug I got from a Christmas market in Wiesbaden in Germany, and it's just, I don't know what's happening. The wine is just pouring out of the bottom of it.
I mean, I guess there is a hole in it
I can't see the
or
hole.
a crack of
There
some
must be a
persuasion.
crack or something. I'm so sad. It's
Although it
okay.
does defeat the purpose of mugginess.
I know. It's okay. I had another one, but it's less
Okay.
exciting because it's from Denver.
Correct.
I was like, ugh.
Never thought I'd get you to admit that, but correct.
I mean, if you're going to use a Christmas market mug, it should not be from Colorado. It should be from Europe.
Oh my gosh, guys, you heard it first. Report it, write it down, send it to Colorado. Let them know.
Hey, we're
They're
back.
Hey, we're back. Welcome to Theology on the Rocks. We're here, kind of alive and,
Kind of alive and still
doing
living
it.
in chaos, and continuing on our trajectory of being completely unhinged in our podcast.
And we are sorry we were gone for so long. Technically, we had an episode after the October
We did. We
11th
had a
one.
YouTube
We
episode.
had a
So if you
YouTube.
haven't seen it, because it's pretty fantastic, we do the Hot Ones episode, Hot Ones Challenge, whatever it's
Maybe
called.
even better. It may be, we may be peaked. That may be it.
I'm truly one of the funniest things. My favorite part about that is that Stuart is just like so stoically eating his wings as you and I are having quite possibly the biggest of meltdowns.
It was bad, especially at the end. But yeah, he
Cool.
does. He just sort of, and the thing is, I'll say, like, he was sort of proving his persona, his caricature, because he
Yes.
just like was chill the whole
He was
time.
so chill. It
But
was
he
definitely.
is arguably better at hot things. Like,
Oh,
he's
he's.
the one that, like, when you go to like proper Indian in Scotland, I say proper Indian in quotations, but you know what I
I mean,
mean.
better than,
Better than the US, yeah.
better than the
And
US.
yeah.
Once again.
He will order like real Indian level. That's like not like white people level.
Really? I'm so impressed by that because
Yeah.
Scottish. That's not how they usually roll.
He might be dying inside and we'll never know
He
because
just show
he's British, so he'll just
it.
like cry alone in his pillow at night. I don't know, but like from the outside, well, you guys watch the video, you can see from the
You can
outside.
see it's just
And
like, oh yeah, that's fine. And we're like, ah!
I had a pile, and you guys couldn't see it on the video, but there was a pile of tissues, just like
Oh yeah.
huge
Oh
pile of
yeah.
tissues. And shout out to Tom, who works with Orbis Books, because he refilled my water at about the halfway point, which may have been vital.
It
I'm
was
not
vital.
sure.
You know what? Honestly, I don't think we could have gotten through that without the help of our dear audience because he refilled
When
your water.
they were so funny, and
Several
then they would like
people.
ask us further questions, and you
Yeah.
can see us just like we're entering into like the void, and we can't.
We're like, please stop trying to get us to be intelligent right now.
Yeah, I know, but
Because
they were so good. They were like
everybody was
the
so lovely.
best group. Yeah,
Yeah, it
no
was
one
fantastic.
asked us what a fork was. It was amazing. So.
Nobody asked about a fork.
Do
It
we
was
want to talk a
so.
little? So what, let's say beforehand that we decided on this episode to kind of catch you guys up because we've been to Theology Beer Camp and we went to AR in San Antonio and
And
we had a little bit of an illness that we can
we've had
discuss
some life crises going on.
and then I got deathly sick. It just was like one thing after another, but And we decided to do mulled wine because both Christy and I lived in Scotland. I don't know if you've heard or not, but
talk to everyone.
I know, right? And so mulled wine was sort of, it's really this time of the year that I think I associate with it.
Oh, it's when
the Christmas markets have started, mm-hmm. and you're not like so sick of Christmas yet. Like it's
no, you're
just
excited about it. You're like, it's time for everything. And all you want to do is like drink mulled wine while freezing outside and handcrafted items that you don't need, but you're
just wooden, a bunch of wooden things.
Lots of wood. I bought a lot of wooden things at various Christmas markets.
I'm going to tell you, I don't think in 11 years I bought one thing.
That is impressive.
But I'm reflecting on it in this very moment. It's not like I went out and was like, I am not going to do this. I also was a PhD student who worked at a Irish bar. So that
was also a PhD student who was teaching online. You just have much more self-control than I do.
I mean, maybe. We'll talk about the Scottish reception later. So.
In this area, at least. I mean, we can just look at our houses and talk about who's the one most likely to buy the weird wooden items.
I mean, yeah. You're going to be the cooler old lady. Just going to have a bunch of cats.
I'm going to have some kind of hoarding situation going on, but...
Probably. It's okay. It'll be a bunch of wooden things. So one thing I didn't know about the UK is that Germany, if you guys are from the US, you'll probably know that Germany is pretty famous for their Christmas markets, and you get the mulled wine. Yep. And there's a lot of like little trinkets you can buy, as Christy noted. But the UK also has the Christmas markets in most of their major cities, that I would say. Yeah. So I predominantly went to the Edinburgh one and the Belfast one, which is where my mug is from, the Belfast Christmas market.
I haven't been to the Belfast one. I went to the Aberdeen one.
I've been to the Aberdeen one when I first started dating that sexy Scottish man.
That sexy Aberdonian. I have been to the Edinburgh one, which I will say is the best one, like hands down. I mean, Scotland.
It's the capital of tourism. I'm not surprised.
And I've been to the Glasgow one a number of times. And my favorite part about the Glasgow one is that sometimes they theme the bar, the like bar where you can go get the glühwein. And last time I went, it was 2021, and it was themed Texas.
Oh, okay. Well,
and it was like the most hilarious representation of Texas I think I've ever seen in my life. So
better than our hotel in San Antonio, where the clearly Latinx people were wearing holsters and various leather vests.
Oh, if Davy Crockett could at least.
If Davy Crockett could have seen it. We stayed at the Davy Crockett Hotel know a lot about Davy Crockett.
It's not just about
we realized that our knowledge of Davy Crockett was minimal.
My knowledge of Davy Crockett is limited to the song.
I know he's the king of the Wild Frontier.
Yes, because of the song.
Yes. So we did mulled wine and we have our glasses. My favorite was probably Edinburgh as well. I don't know that I went to Glasgow one.
The Glasgow one was right off the train in City Center. It's right by the train stop.
I'm sure I saw it.
Very
small. I would have to ride into the City Center when I was living in Glasgow. I've
seen it, but it's very small. And
Definitely been to Aberdeen, Edinburgh, and Belfast. Yeah. Belfast.
One Christmas, I went with a couple of my friends to do a Christmas market tour. We went to a couple in Germany. We went to one in France, and then two in Belgium.
When you say France in your accent, it always makes me think of the Coneheads. We come from France.
France.
We come from France. I don't know why. I don't know why. Please continue.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. so that's where I got my V-spotted mug, except that now I'm very sad.
I'm drinking my mulled wine,
but we went to the so one in Bruges, and
in Bruges,
yeah. And I made the girls watch the movie before we went to Bruges because
it's
I was like,
great movie.
I am not going to stop talking about this the entire time we're there, and I didn't. It was the greatest thing. I loved Bruges so much, but I also loved the constant, like, ooh, this scene happened here.
Oh, gosh. I don't think I would know. I mean, it's been a minute, but I do think Colin Farrell is absolutely best when he's with Brendan Gleeson. Is that his name? Yes. Yeah. I like that.
Oh,
and
for sure.
The Shores of Endenmore. I don't know what that
is
called, but you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I know what you're talking about. It's great. Yeah.
It is. And it's a lot about nothing. I mean, it's like a Seinfeld movie, really.
I mean,
it's
slightly similar to In Bruges, but.
100%. I mean, there's definitely an underlying whatever, but like.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's more about them being delightful.
Exactly.
I would argue.
Which is all I really want. It's just a movie about them being delightful.
The first movie I took Stuart to see was. Do you know that movie where Brendan Gleeson's a priest? And he's basically in this place where nobody really believes in religion anymore. It's not called Faith. It's called something like that. And he basically, like, a bunch of stuff happens. And in the first scene, someone corners him in the confession booth and said, I'm going to kill you, not because you're a bad priest, but because you're a good priest. Because this person, I won't give it away, had bad priest relations. And so... it's like sort of a mystery, and so it's kind of like Clue. He interacts with all these people, but they're all just broken people. In this
Calgary,
that's exactly. That was the first film I took Stuart to see.
That's
and he was like,
that's amazing.
It was so intense. It's a very intense movie, I will say. Like, but it's probably one of my favorite movies. Like, it's definitely top like five.
Yeah.
Because it's basically him dealing, wrestling, and listeners, you will probably like it too. I will say a lot of triggers if you have issues with stuff. Just look at it beforehand. There's a lot going on there. Yeah. He's trying to figure out how to be a priest, and his daughter lives in like London, and she called him, and you know, she's like, what do you think is the thing that people most miss out the most? And he's got some of these great one-liners. She's like, you know, people talk a lot about sin and hell, but I'm really a man that likes to talk about forgiveness. And I don't think we talk about that enough. And it's just Brendan Gleeson being him.
Yeah.
His totally believable self. Oh, it'll make you cry.
Yeah. You should have to check it out. I've never seen it. I will have to watch that. That's fantastic.
It's Leah Robinson. 10 out of 10 recommend, unless you have some of those issues I mentioned.
Yeah,
I wish to check out. I'm trying not to give too much away, but also just, you know, the church, whatever.
The church, yeah.
The church.
Yeah.
So, we went to Springfield, Missouri. And
Springfield, Missouri.
And I drove a car from North Carolina, and Christy flew an airplane. She flew it herself.
I flew an airplane too. No, I did not.
By the way, have you taken? I've been drinking my mulled wine the whole time.
Just, me too.
Okay, let's do it.
I will say, it's good. Thanks to my aunt who bought me a bottle of mulled wine.
Oh, you had the actual
premix. So I had actual mulled wine premix, which is the only way to go, because one time I tried to make it from scratch and it was a nightmare.
I mean, there's some shit floating around.
You have to strain it. It's a whole thing.
Well, I didn't even do that. But not to the level of that one drink I had where I was constantly picking stuff out, whatever that was. The mint julep or whatever. We're not at that level.
No.
It was... So we went to Missouri. I drove the car. It was very long, but it was fine until probably like Missouri,
which is just what you would expect.
Flat, so flat. Because when I was driving through North Carolina, like the mountains and like the trees were in Tennessee was the trees, and you go through Nashville and then you hit Missouri and it's just flat,
it's just flat.
And there were no towns, so And if any of
you were worried about gas for a while too, you were like, I have to get gas and I am so close to being out and there's no gas station. Meanwhile,
I was there like 8 hours before
I was so drugged up and I was exhausted and I was like bumbling around. No one knew where to put me. I was just kind of like existing in Missouri. And Leah's like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
She looked so Christy takes anti-anxiety meds for flying, which I really should because I just end up drinking. But like when I was driving, it just was a stretch of road that never had an exit. And I thought, oh, and then my little meter just kept ticking down and I was like, oh no. So usually, you know, I feel like I have to, I don't ask for help. But what I usually do is I call people and I let them know that they should put a pin on my experience because it may lead to both a positive or a negative. We're just going to put a pin in it. And yeah. So I called Christy to put a pin in my current situation.
Except I was not in a state.
Christy was out with the fairies, as they say in the UK.
I really was. I was deeply out with the fairies.
She was in La La Land. And I was like, look, I'm like 3 hours from you. And I was like, I think I'm going to be okay, but I cannot predict that at the moment because, and you're just like, oh, that's bad. And I was like, yeah, it is. Are you okay?
Nope. I was not.
She was like, I think I should get food. I was like, Christy, I'm about to run out of gas over here. Like, what are you talking about? I called her, too. I did end up making it. Spoiler alert, the pen was not needed. And when I got to a Taco Bell, I called her, and she was like, no, you just walked to a burger place or something.
I took an Uber.
An Uber.
So what happened was my flight was very, very, very early in the morning. Like, I landed in Springfield at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And
I probably didn't get there till like 5 or 6.
Yeah, this lovely young man picked me up at the airport. He was supposed to. He was with Theology Beer Camp. Shout out to Trip and all of the Christy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
For organizing it and for like, you know, like making sure that I left the airport and things like that. So this nice young man picks me up and he was like, okay, where are we going? And I was like, I have absolutely no idea.
Like, I thought you knew.
You would know because I didn't know if I could get into our Airbnb yet because I didn't have any. I had the address for it, but that was literally all I had. And
which feels like enough.
It feels like enough if you know that you can get in. So he took me over 100%. There. We could not get in. So he calls somebody, and essentially they end up taking me. He ends up taking me over to where Trip and some of the other people who had gotten there the day earlier, where they were staying. And I walked in and I feel very sorry for everyone there who had to interact with me.
But
because I was just in a state. I remember that I got into it.
Can confirm.
I got into a fight with somebody about the Barbie movie.
Oh.
Not a fight, but like a heated debate maybe. I don't know. Honestly, I couldn't tell you.
I mean, it happens. We're a bunch of nerds. It's the nature of the game.
Yep. And then I just decided I needed food, so I called myself an Uber. I went to Red Robin where I ate the entirety of the menu. Because I was just
minus the meat product.
Minus the meat part. I got they have actually pretty good veggie burgers there. So and then I went back to the house. And it, like, 5 minutes after, no one knew I had left, firstly. I had just, like, snuck in, snuck out.
I'm still driving.
They were like, oh, we're about to order lunch. What do you want? And I was like, nothing.
Nothing. I just you have, like, drool coming out of your mouth. Yeah. And then I went. Burger parts.
I fell asleep on a couch for a little while. Who knows?
You did tell me that you needed to sleep. That was one part.
And then eventually, they were like, oh, your Airbnb is open. And I was like, okay, bye. I just left. I went to the Airbnb. I took another
nap. So I will I will say that Christy, I brought her into this group, which is a lovely, wonderful group.
The lovely, wonderful group.
But she was by herself. Yeah.
I was by myself.
She was going to the wedding. Her date for the wedding, who's friends with the people at the wedding, was
wildly late.
Was wildly late.
And I was incredibly drugged up.
Which is just a great combo to introduce yourself. So, I mean, so, but then on the first day we went and I set up my book display and discovered that my trunk wouldn't shut, which becomes a real sort of theme throughout the 2 days we were there. Because, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen that are bad, but like, come to find out your trunk not shutting is a pretty nasty one. Like it just
was not shut.
It just wouldn't shut. Shout out to Myron. I had philosophers trying to fix it. There was a very lovely man who gave me a bungee cord and I didn't get his name, but I want to shout out to him.
Yeah.
There were people genuinely trying to help. Christy and I both crawled into the trunk.
We both crawled in that.
Myron took pictures. Myron
for taking pictures of that experience.
Of us crawling into the trunk. Because, by the way, it was still very hot in Missouri. And it was just like this whole thing. And I feel like I never quite got over the trunk situation.
No.
Mostly because I had to drive back to North Carolina. It wasn't like the day-to-day thing that I feared. It was really
the drive back.
Yeah,
get it very properly bungeed down by the end. And
I did.
Are those bungees still on your trunk?
Yes, they are. When the actual fix is, it's just the latch. It's like $80. It's not the money. It's just
the time and effort.
It's just me thinking about doing it. And Stuart and I both are kind of that way about cars because neither of us are proficient at it. My dad was a mechanic, which is funny, but I'm not. That's part of the problem, actually, because he just would be like, I'll do it. So
yeah. I mean, this is also my problem is that I had two older brothers who were very good at car stuff and my dad who was like proficient at car stuff. And then one of my good friends and colleagues was at one point when he was doing his PhD was a mechanic. And so I never needed to know about cars. And I just decided one day, like, this isn't a thing I need to learn. I don't care anymore. But they do have a broken trunk. And I'm like, I can't help you at all.
Yeah, well, and I was kind of similar and didn't know. And then I had a bunch of people that are like theologians, like musing over the car. And no, then so then we fast forward. So Christy and I were both doing basically the conference was divided into these kind of categories and different themes. The whole theme was deconstructing. So this idea of sort of taking down some perhaps learned ideas that we know about things that we've learned in history and just how we reframe them and, you know, don't throw them out, but maybe think about things in a different way. And right. So Christy was in, what was your group? Was it
mine
just
was just
defining
what is deconstruction?
Okay, so I didn't need to say that part.
So,
and hers was like the first day, I think.
Yeah, it was the first day. It was the morning session, I think, or not the morning session, but like one of the first breakout sessions.
And this is going to become key to this story, by the way, because I do want you to talk about the fork. Is I came and saw her give her talk, and it was beyond lovely. It was the least controversial talk.
I am controversial pretty regularly in my life, and like
literally everything I write is
nothing about me is typically like people are not usually like Christy is so like just so calm and sweet and stuff, but
this was not controversial. This was about a book, and it was very beautifully done and greatly, I mean, I'm not just saying this because of Christy. It basically would make you feel like a Mr. Rogers like story corner. It was wonderful. So then I thought, cool. She finishes her paper. I'm like, yay, good job. And then I think I need to go get my trunk fixed. So I'm gonna go and get my trunk fixed because I saw Christy give her paper. Like, Q&A. I'm never interested in Q&A. I'm sorry to those who like it. It's, I don't know. Is it? It's just never a thing that I'm really into. So, I mean, I want you to ask me questions, but I want it to be over like coffee or like after or something and not like in a group setting. Because you get a lot of people that are like, I'm going to get to my question, but it's more of a comment.
I have more of a comment than
I'm more of a comment. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Nobody likes that.
I will also talk to you about over coffee. But so then I raced to Pet Boys. I raced to a certain garage and I had my Georgia jersey, my UGA jersey on, and I realized I was in Missouri. And so I just like stripped it off as I was going to this garage. Cause I looked and there was just like, I looked at the dudes and I was like, they're definitely college football fans. I just made some serious stereotype judgments. And so then I like got out and just was like, can you please help me with my trunk? And I'm going to tell you, shout out to the Pet Boys in Springfield, Missouri.
Yep.
They were so kind and nice to me. And the guy spent a good like 15 minutes trying to get this lock to work. And he was just like, it's just broken. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he was like, I said, can you fix it? He goes, no, it's just like, he goes, what year is your car? I was like, 2016. He goes, yeah, it's just old. And it reminds me of a TikTok that was like about going to the doctor in your 40s. And it's like, this guy was like, oh, your ankle's busted. And he goes, oh, okay, what can I do to make it better? You can't. You're just gonna have to stretch it. And the guy's like, oh, like if I stretch it, will it get better? No.
No.
It's just gonna be like this and then you're gonna die. And I was like, that's sort of what this guy was like. He was like, I said, could you fix it? He's like, no. You just need another one. I was like, okay. So anyway, fast forward, I had to get bungee cords because I couldn't get this tiny little part done. I race back to beer camp and find there has been controversy, as the British say. And I'm like, oh, well, I missed the second person's paper, so maybe no, it was about Christmas paper. And I was like, the one about the book.
the
Holocaust story book.
Yep.
Would you like to take it from there? And tell me what happened in that in-between time.
What happened was that the man, who's Dr. Bruce Ellis is his name? Gosh. Why am I paid? Okay. Anyway, he is like a professional about deconstruction. This is what he writes about. His books are on deconstruction. So he gave a very lovely, like, here's what it is, how Derrida is like kind of the
Derrida.
Catalyst for these conversations about deconstruction. He is very like good, solid kind of academic explanation of what deconstruction is. And then, like you said, I gave this paper about a book, which is a book by Jonathan Safran Foer called Tree of Codes. And it's kind of a book / memorial to those who died in the Holocaust. And kind of the way that people talk about it is that it's revealing that when we lose things, those wounds or those holes are left behind, but we can still create a new story out of it without ignoring them. And so you should go look up the book. It's a gorgeous book. It's incredibly rare at this point, but it's great. And so, you know, just a nice kind of, both of them were just nice, like deconstruction. What is it? How do we deal with it? And then the Q&A time for the most part was really also very lovely. Like, people are asking questions about how to deal with it emotionally. One woman said, you know, how, like, what kind of systems of support did you have? And I talked a lot about making sure that you have good people to talk to, people who are going through it or maybe have gone through it before, like this kind of stuff. And everyone's asking good questions, and then this man stands up and he's like, well, his hand shot up like so quickly. And Tim, who hosts the podcast, The New Evangelicals,
he was
our like moderator,
yeah, which is good. I think that he was
Oh, massive shout out and thank you to Tim, because he was so adept at handling the situation, while I just sat there laughing.
Well, because it's a defense mechanism.
Because it was, well, a defense mechanism, but I also just found the whole thing so incredibly ridiculous. So this man stands up and he's like, literally says, "Now that you've stolen the center of gravity from everyone in this room."
And apparently was very pointedly talking to you and not the other person who also talked about it.
I think
who was, I think, self-identified as male, I would say.
Yes. I think that, well, one thing that I felt like in the beginning it was kind of a broader thing, but then he did start to hone in on me, but mostly he wouldn't let me speak. Bruce was allowed to speak to answer the questions, and I was not. Every time I went to start saying something, the man would start yelling again, pretty aggressively. Tim kept having to say, like, "You're bringing in the absolute wrong energy to this conversation." And then Tim had to keep saying over and over, like, "We need to let Christy speak. You've not given her a chance to speak."
Yeesh.
Anyway, I feel like in the moment, you know, as you do, you handle it the way that you feel like you can in the moment. But his,
well, a learning thing too for people giving papers, that this can, you can't pick who's in the audience, and sometimes people react very viscerally to your,
and sometimes people are just
paper
dicks, honestly.
That's absolutely true.
And honestly, I don't think it really had anything to do with either of our papers or our talks or anything. I think he came in already planning on what to say, because there are a couple of points that I didn't think of in the moment. Not that I feel like my answer wasn't, like, fine. It was fine. My answer in the moment was fine. But if I was going to respond to him now, which I'm going to do on this podcast.
There you go.
Because what I'm saying is, he's like, "You've stolen the center of gravity, and now we don't have objective truth anymore. So my question to you all is, what is a fork?" And we
kind of which will 100% be a t-shirt, guys.
It 100% needs to be a t-shirt. It became a whole thing, and we honed in on this, like, that's an absurd question. Like, also, because what is a fork? Like, are you talking about a shrimp fork or a regular dinner fork or a spork or a pitchfork? Or, like, we really went on kind of a road with that. But what I had not in the moment realized was that we had already answered that question. Both Bruce and I had talked pretty extensively about the fact that there is objective truth. We talked about it in terms of, like, knowing that the earth is round. We know objectively that the earth is round. We have seen pictures, we have data, we have science to back it up. But that, like, knowing certain objective truths and then being able to say, "Here is what we absolutely know about God," those are not too comparable. You are comparing apples to frogs. Like,
100%.
It is not at all appropriate to compare God to a fork. And
I don't think he would have gotten that many words out.
I don't think I would have gotten that many words out either. He wasn't going to let me say any of that. But that's my actual answer, is comparing God to a fork is actually incredibly disrespectful. And disrespectful not only to the conversation, disrespectful to God, but also, like,
disrespectful to forks.
Disrespectful to forks.
But the diversity saying, like, of forks and all there.
Like, he didn't listen to our talk. He wasn't coming in to listen to us. He was coming in with his plan already set. He knew exactly what he was going to say. He waited to be the last person to ask a question. That was his plan from before either of us ever spoke.
Was he older or younger?
Roughly, like, he looked around our age, maybe, you know, that, like, vague, like, late 20s to early 40s, kind of, like, who knows how old any of us are.
I really hope that that's how, where we are. Yeah. I want to be in the vague 20 to 40 category.
That's what we are, Leah. I am declaring it. But, you know,
he was somewhere,
and also he was far away, so I couldn't,
okay,
like,
fair enough.
You know, but, and again, Tim handled it so well and was great at kind of quelling that, came over to me after and was like, "Do you want to talk to him or should we keep him away from you?" And I was like, I'll talk to him if you want. If he wants to talk to me, he doesn't want to talk to me. I already know that.
Probably not if it's not public. Yeah.
Yeah. His concern is not to change my mind. His concern is to look like, you know,
he's the he's holder of truth or whatever.
And I guess he said something about like, don't let those academics, you know, tell you that you don't know things or something. Like, he's a real
he's kind of at the wrong conference, unfortunately.
Right? Like, go away, sir. So, yeah. So that was kind of the big to do at my talk, which was just crazy.
Yeah, and so I came back and I heard
so unexpected.
I know, and she said that, and I was like, what? Because listeners, I've heard lots of talks and lots of papers. This was not one that I thought was going to garner that response at all.
Also, I've given
me and York were doing stuff on communism. I thought that would be way more intense.
Yeah, you did. So you were partnered with York, who is one of our new favorite people in the world.
100%. He's at Vanderbilt. Rigler?
Again, we are terrible with names. If that
are more personal and we know first names.
Yes.
But
York is great. We saw him great.
We did. Wonderful human. Yeah, he's at Vandy. But his expertise is sort of
economic and
political. Yeah, 100%. And so they were like, well, we'll pair you with him. And I was like, I am unsure. So I just kind of did an autoethnography about living, because I have done study abroads and lived in China, Vietnam, and Cuba. So I talked about that. And mostly my talk was really just about deconstructing when I told my mom I was going to Cuba, she like got really concerned.
Yeah.
And upset. And
that's how my dad was when I said I was going to China.
Yeah. There's a whole construction about what's going to happen. And I was really quick to say China was its own experience. I was a bit younger, so I don't think I clocked stuff. Cuba, I was in my MDiv, so I have a little bit more both memory but also sort of critical thinking about it. Yeah. And I will say that one of the stories I told, which was one of my favorite stories, is we went to go see a movie, and I remember I was going with just someone I had met, because that's how Cuba works, and it was a woman and young woman, and she was like, let's go to the movie. She goes, you need to bring booze and if you play an instrument. And I was like, I can do one of those for sure. But I don't play an instrument. And so we did that. And then we got to the movie theater. And I was deeply confused about why we had to bring that into the theater. And when we get there, the movie's playing in Spanish. I don't even remember what movie it was. And I think that's important. I don't remember what movie it was. And all of a sudden the power goes out, because there's just random power cuts. And no one gets upset. No one asks for a refund. No one's yelling at people, the ticket booth people, because they didn't do it. They didn't cut the power. Everyone walks out and they already have their instruments in their booths. And we go to the square outside of the movie theater, and it's where I have my first Cuban cigar. And we just drink and play music and cigars, and everyone's joyous. And I said, and you know what? Again, want to emphasize, to this day, I couldn't tell you what that movie was or how much I paid to get into it. Because it didn't matter.
Because that doesn't matter. Yeah, that comes, that becomes just a lead up to the actual story, you know?
And it's funny because my parents were so concerned. Now, what I will say is, did I shut down an entire internet cafe in Havana because I tried to get on CNN.com? Yes. Yes, I did. So let's put that pin in the map. Did I get killed? No, I did not. But I did get told I had to leave and that I probably couldn't come back. which is fair. That's fair.
Oh my gosh.
This is pre-smartphone days. So, but I did say, you know, and I talked about China a little bit, and it's just like this idea of, you know, they're as curious about us as we are about them. And is there a limit of information coming in and out of these countries? Yes, 100%. That's, again, the internet cafe. But is it a fearful realm where there are people going to snatch you Like,
no. Yeah. No. Well, and two, I think that, you know, it could be said we also have limits on the information coming in and out. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
I always say the illusion of freedom or the illusion of democracy.
Like, yeah. Like,
we have that a lot.
I think the idea that we have it so much better is like, just
it's
not.
It's a different understanding of what's the better life. Like, if that had been America and the power going on in a movie theater, imagine we're watching Barbie or the Taylor Swift Eras Tour.
Like, I was in a
people
movie.
Would be crying.
I was in a movie once here in the States. Again, do not remember what the movie was. And at one point it cuts and the lights turn on because somebody was having a medical emergency and they had to stop the movie and like deal with the medical emergency that was happening in the theater. And they had to give us all refunds. And there were people who were angry. And it's like, how are we unable to see the bigger picture here?
Yep. This, I mean, people were sharing, like, I took this cigar from this guy who, I'm not going to lie, put it in his gob, broke off the end of it, and was like, you want? I mean, everyone was sharing stuff. And I was like, yeah, I did. And there's a picture of me doing that. He's smoking that cigar, trying to anyway, because they're intense. But like, what's your definition? Yeah. And I think that's what I said. I put up some scripture and I was like, is capitalism and all of its forms of this private individual wealth, is that kind of what Jesus was really talking about? You know, and I'm not saying communism is I say this about religion and systems and politics. People will screw up anything.
Yeah, anything that humans are involved with
is going to get messed up.
Massive flaws and problems and all sorts. There is no thing that we can do that is the perfect thing.
100%. And so I did that, and then York did a real, and I will say I was in the last slot on the last day, and it was not my favorite thing. And John Dominic Crossan, who is a very famous biblical scholar, went before York and I, and he did, you know, he did go on for a little while. He said, you know, I was really happy to be able to see him, but York and I were like, I was like, I have to drive to North Carolina with a busted trunk. Like, I gotta get out. So I literally did my paper and I was like, look, y'all, this is shorter than what I wanted to do, but like, I gotta get out of here because I've gotta drive back. And but at this stage, because it's such a kind of, it's a very intimate conference, you get to talk to a lot of people. Shout out to Bryant, by the way.
Yes, Bryant.
One of our listeners, we got to finally meet.
And to Matt, too. Matt.
Yeah.
So grateful to meet. We had such a lovely time meeting people and
Tom
interacting with Lisa. Yeah, Tom, like interacting with so many of our listeners that it was like fun to put faces to names, but also to like get to know people. And like,
it was by far the funnest part, I would say.
Absolutely. It was a great conference. I really
Hot Wings Challenge, which
the Hot Wings Challenge
you can see on the YouTube.
Yep. It's in our links, our bio links.
My fear is that people liked it so much that next year they're going to want us to do it again.
I've never seen that again.
I probably would. Christy, I dare you to do it again.
Oh, well, that's just rude. You know.
I know. See, this is how you got you. This is a secret with Christy. You have to
tell her. This is a secret now. Everyone knows.
I know. So that was really, really, yeah, it was great. And so we had a great time. And yeah, meeting you guys was by far the greatest part. I mean, the papers were fun, and there were some really nice moments, but like hanging out with fellow academics as well as, you know, just people who are theology nerds, as Tripp calls them, great.
It's just a really good environment, and I think they've cultivated a really great conference. So next year, guys, if you are interested, we'll be posting about it again next year, so keep a lookout for that. It's, I think, usually in October, but
then we got back.
Then we got back, and then we made a real quick turnaround and went to AAR in San Antonio.
Well, we did, but in between that,
Leah.
In between that. So in between that, my husband Stuart has type 1 diabetes. And we had gone out and gotten some food, and he came back and he was like, I'm just feeling really sick. I don't feel good. And I was like, and I will say, like, Stuart's a barfer, and I think you have to know if you are one of those. Like, yeah. I am not, though.
I am not either.
Though I've... foreshadow to a Scottish reception. But I am not one typically. But
yeah. Like, things are extreme if I'm barfing.
Yes. I'm very clumsy, and not just when I'm drinking, but just in general. Like, so that's the thing. But like, you, Stuart's like, you know, he's a barfer. That's sort of his thing. And again, not when we're not just exclusively talking about drinking. This is like just in general. So he starts getting sick, and I'm like, okay, that sucks. Maybe it was the food. He gets sick all night long. He wakes up the next morning and he looks at me and he is just out of it, like worse than Christy getting off of a plane. And he doesn't recognize who I am. He's like breathing heavily, like sharp breaths. And he just is like, I heard all over. I want to die. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought this was just food. So we take him to the hospital. I will tell you, if you're not like a medical person or you don't have type 1 or type 2, you're supposed to be in the range of like, again, don't take this as like medical advice, but like what I've been told is like 80 to like 100 and, you know, early hundreds.
Yeah.
He was at 726 when he came in. So he had gone into ketoacidosis.
Quickly tell us what that number represents, though. Like,
it's your blood sugar. It's how high your blood sugar is. And basically what happens is that, as he explains it, when your blood sugar gets too high, and again, he can explain it much better. If it gets really low, oftentimes, hopefully you don't pass out or anything, but you can kind of bump it back up with like sugar. If it gets too high, you need insulin. And his insulin wasn't working. He had a pump. He has a pump. So it just wasn't working. And so he went into ketoacidosis, which is basically where your body starts to poison itself. And there's a whole like chemical thing there, but it's essentially your body is trying to make up for the fact that it doesn't have insulin. It starts to break down stuff, and that stuff becomes basically like acid.
Yeah.
And your body, that's why all of his muscles hurt and why he felt like he wanted to die. So he came in, and he was in the hospital for about a week, where they found out that he had strep throat, which is what caused a lot of times, you get it whenever you're first diagnosed because you don't know that you have it, or you get a virus. And so he got a virus. Yeah. And it was really like, I told Christy, I'm not a dramatic person, but like all of his doctors were like, he should be in a coma or he could be dead. Like,
it was very bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really bad. He lost like 15 pounds while he was in the hospital. It was a whole thing. And I want to do, whenever I'm far enough away from it, because it's funny, because I was telling this story to my colleague, Kevin Taylor, who is a theologian, and his wife, Jenny. And someone made a comment, I don't remember, I think it was him, Stuart. He was like, you tell it like you weren't there. And I'm like, I think that's right. I think we're both talking about it. Even he talks about it like he wasn't there. Yeah. And I think that, I mean, you've studied trauma. Like, I think
it's, I mean, for sure, it's a defense mechanism and a way of coping. But eventually you'll be able to kind of sit in it a little bit more and talk about the effects. And for sure, I think that this is something that everybody experiences all of this in different ways, but it's very life-changing kind of a thing to have something that traumatic happen. And it was very traumatic. I mean, you were texting us throughout, but like my niece's youngest son also has type 1 diabetes and was ironically also in the hospital at the same time as Stuart.
It was so weird. I thought that was an old picture when you sent it to me, but it wasn't.
Yeah, no, and he's just very little, and they found out he had it on his, I think, third birthday. So his was much less, but I was texting with her, and I told her what Stuart's numbers were, and she was like, that is the worst, like, that's horrible. I can't believe he's alive. And so, like, it was really, really drastically bad. But I feel like for the first while, we were still recovering and everything, like, being able to kind of get some distance is really important. But I do think that eventually, like, being able to also sit in that and say, like, okay, so here are the things that both of you learned about yourselves, about not just like practical learned, like what Stuart needs to do or what you need to do or whatever, but like just emotionally, you know, like,
Oh my God, I was so broken. Like I cried
yeah,
all the
like
time. I cried all the
you,
time, which I don't cry. And I also
yeah.
prayed. And it was an interesting thing because my publisher with SCM, David Shervington, was talking about SST, Society of Systematic Theology. We were talking about, it was a side conversation about
Yeah.
publicizing my book, but their theme for this year is prayer. And he was like, could you do a talk on prayer? And I was like, I'm actually becoming really interested in that subject after this.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's something that you told me too during all of it was like both of you kind of wrestling with like what how it was affecting your beliefs in God and prayer and all that. Which is certainly something that when my brother-in-law died, my family also did, you know, like there was a lot of how do we understand this? How do we make sense of this? And not in a kind of flippant way where it's like, oh, God works everything out for good or some like Hallmark greeting card kind of thing, but like actually dealing with all of that. And I think that's something that's really important to do.
And me
But
being a chaplain,
certainly
like,
is not something you need to do like while you're still reeling from
no, and
it.
I actually got strep throat, it should be noted, right after, which is why I sound slightly whatever and I'm coughing off into the distance. So I got sick after, but like, I think it is one of those things where I think being a chap, because I was a chaplain, which I've mentioned on the podcast before, in a children's hospital and in a rehab center, and I would give out these instructions and being pastoral, and it was meaningful, and I meant it, and it was spiritual, and it was, authentic. But if someone had said it to me in that instance, I have a new perspective on how I am. I probably look to those people, if that makes sense. Like I'd never been on the other side. Like my mother got cancer and my father got cancer and my father almost died of cancer, well, cancer related stuff. And so I've definitely like experienced grief and trauma, but I don't think I'd ever been that, 'cause like with my parents there was the other parent and they're my parents,
Yeah, and there's, yeah.
but with this it was like Stuart is my husband and I'm the person.
Yeah.
Like they were like, can he take blood if he needs it? We don't think he's going to, but it's just these standard questions.
Right,
And it
yeah.
was like, you can answer for him or he can answer, because he was out
Yeah.
for days. Like he was not conscious. And I just was like, yes, I guess so.
Yeah.
But it was like I was the person. And so
Well, it's almost like it's happening to you also because
well,
your lives are completely intertwined.
we're so intertwined, and it was a real wake up call, because he's 40, I'm 41. Like we don't live crazy lifestyles,
No.
but like we shouldn't be in this position, but here we are. And there
Yeah.
were times where they couldn't get his blood sugar down, even when he was in the hospital. And I
Yeah.
was like, what am I gonna do?
Yeah.
Like, because I married this person and I love this person and this is my best friend. But not only that, it's like we have a house, like we have a life. Like, what? I mean, I feel so much sympathy for your sister going through that, because it's like, and I think they had kids, right? Too.
Yeah,
I
three.
mean, Lord, add
Yeah.
that onto the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it is, it's something like when you experience it and, you know, also he was not my husband, he was my brother-in-law, but like watching her go through that, watching the kids go through it, it's just a very, like I said, life-altering kind of thing. You have very different understandings of what it means to deal with these kinds of griefs and these kinds of traumas, and then also like how you understand those things in life, you know?
Yeah,
What do you do when that happens? Like, is
and I'm
there.
sitting here like you, Leah, you spouted for years to these parents whose kids were dying about this stuff, which you believe. I wasn't giving them lip service. I believed it. But then when I was on the other side, all of a sudden I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. Like, okay, like what if he doesn't wake up ever? Like what, you know, and it's such a different, I think it's actually made me, one thing I can reflect on, even if I can't dig too deep into it, is I think it'll make me a better minister
Oh, for
because
sure. Yeah.
I'll know what
It's
it's like to be presented with, let's pray or let's talk about it or that kind of stuff.
Like I, prior to everything happening, I took a spiritual giftings test, and it will shock zero people that I scored a zero in compassion.
That shocks me. That
Well,
shocked
but because
me.
you've only known me post, you know,
Oh, I see. Okay.
and so like pre the deaths of everyone, there were a lot of deaths that happened real close together. I, like I said, I scored a zero. People used to make jokes about like, don't cry in front of Christy, she doesn't know what to do, like all sorts of things that were very true at the time. And post all of it, I'm totally different in terms of that kind of stuff. I know how to be in that uncomfortable stuff. I know how to deal with those emotions. I know so much more about what is happening when you're going through all of that. And so, like, if I ever took that test again, which I'm probably not going to, but like, I imagine I would not score a zero in compassion anymore, you know? But
No.
like, not to say, like, oh, thank God that happened, because no, I don't wish that on anybody. I wish I could have learned how to be compassionate in much gentler ways, but it does make you better at stuff, you know?
It does. And I think it'll make me a better, this is going to sound cheesy, but it'll make me a better partner as well, I think. Because we take a lot of stuff for granted, I think,
We
and
do.
it's made me very aware of that. And so I think, yeah, I mean, we'll wrestle with it for a while, and it's what therapy is for. I mean, strong advocate of that. So, but Stuart is better for all those wondering.
Yes, you're
He is
sure.
doing better. I immediately got worse,
And
which probably was
then I was like, stay away from your husband that almost died. I was like, don't go anywhere near him.
that compassion score was showing through there. But he's
I was
doing,
just like, don't get him sick again.
I know. Oh, sorry. Never mind.
No.
That was compassion. It was.
It was
And
compassion. It was
I
just
will
kind of a
say he was
panic.
affected too, because the first person who sent us food, I will say, it was Christy. She got us Uber Eats, which, you know, I'm from the South, so food was always like, I was constantly taking casseroles to people with my grandma. It was like legit my part-time job that I didn't get paid for.
Food feels.
And my favorite thing is my family, my mom does this too, but my grandma did before, was she would be like, well, you know so and so. And I would be like,
No.
Mom, her name was Mom Mary. I'd be like, Mom Mary, I don't know her. Like, you know her. She's your cousin, but like your cousin's sister, something. You know her. And she sits next to us in church, and well, not next to us, but like in the diagonal. And then her great aunt died. And I'd be like, okay, look, I'm not fighting this, but they just wanted me to know her. And I was like, I don't, I just don't.
I just don't know
I'm 16 years old. I don't know anybody. Like, I'm sorry. But anyway, but Christy got us food, and the receipt remains on our fridge because it was his first meal out of the hospital. And so
I'm
if you
glad I.
ever question about giving food, it's a very loving sort of thing. And we may have had a little bit of an emotional eating of that food, which was kind of funny. Because it felt like normalcy, you know, and anyone who's been through that will know, like,
the first normal thing to do is really important. He
was back in the house.
Yeah.
He couldn't eat solid food for a while because he still had strep throat. And so he was eating like soups and stuff. Yeah. And so that was the first real meal he had. And we were just sitting there literally watching, like, we also, this is a new thing, we can't watch scarier negative stuff anymore.
Oh my god, you know what,
we've been watching the Christmas baking show.
My like abilities to watch certain things are totally different too. And in fact, I watched, because after Kevin died, I moved to Scotland, and one of the first things, because I didn't know anybody, I would just like binge watch TV shows. One of the first things I watched was The Good Wife. Have you ever seen it?
Is that Nicole Kidman?
No, it's a series.
I haven't.
Lawyer. Yeah. Anyway, it's a really good show, but somebody dies. I'm not going to say who, because you should watch it, but like somebody dies and I sobbed for a whole day. And again, historically in my life, everyone, my nickname in college was Dark Heart. Like,
Lord, who are your friends? Actually, I already know.
I am notorious for not crying at things and for not showing emotions and stuff like that. And like, I just was sitting there sobbing because somebody died and I couldn't deal with it. And so I had to be very careful about like what I was watching for a while after.
Yeah. We're definitely in that space. And it's just changed everything. And so, and then after that, nothing seemed important. So, like, Christy would be like, well, you know, if you want to do the podcast. And I was like, I can't do if it almost cripples you because you feel like all I could do was make sure that he wasn't dying.
Yeah.
And it was terrible because I was like, you know, I had work. I had, like, other stuff. And, you know, all the stuff that makes
you don't want to do anything. You're just like, no, none of it matters.
That's right. And so... anyway, I think we're gonna have to save AR for next week.
Yes, we will.
Which is fine. We'll talk about going. We talked about how Leah got her groove back, but also maybe got her groove back a little too much.
It's a good cliffhanger, guys. It was such a good time. We'll save it.
I didn't barf on the Alamo, but it was very close. Remember the Alamo. I kind of do.
Kind of.
Kind of. It's about 50-50.
Oh, gosh. Well, hey, it's good to be back. And
we love you and we miss you.
We missed you all.
Done my heart good.
And we'll be back next week also with more stories and topics and whatnot. But
yeah. So.
Also, we've got a really good alcohol book that we're going to make a fancy drink from. So
I didn't know that, but I will say that the picture of my socks as a concluding thing was because I had to put socks on today for the first time. And any other Southerners will know I wear Teva flip-flops all year round. There's a few months where I have to put socks on and it's,
I had to turn the air conditioning back on today. So
you had to turn it back on.
I had to turn it back on.
Florida, get out of my life.
My house was 77 degrees and I couldn't.
I hate everything that you're saying. I would say let's switch places, but that place is a shit show. All right.
On that note. Thanks.
We love you.
We love you. We'll be back soon.
Goodbye.